Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 27, Part 2 of the content of the astronomy block. So to begin with, this is an assignment that you might want to give the children 1 or even 2 weeks in advance, because you won't always have optimum conditions for observing the stars. So, and you should explain this in advance to parents, so that they can give the child some help, some guidance, and encourage the children to call you up if they don't quite get what they're supposed to do. It's one thing for you to explain it in class. It's quite another for them to be standing there gazing at the stars, understanding exactly what the nature of this assignment is. So it's a good exercise all around. It really helps them learn how to listen better, perhaps, and to act on what they've heard. So what they are meant to do is, with the compass that they were perhaps given in grade 4 or with their inherent sense of direction, they stand in an open spot which affords them a 360-degree view of the sky, or as close to that as they could get, especially in an urban environment. And then they face due east and choose a star that is fairly close to the horizon. Make sure it's a bright star, and you hope it is a star. Tell them it should be twinkling. That way they know it won't be a planet. They'll learn about that later. And they look at that star and then sketch it. And they should do that in such a way that they also include in the sketch a landmark, a tree, a big bush, a building, a chimney, whatever, so that they can place that star that they're observing in relationship to the landscape around it. So they faced east, let's say at 8 o'clock at night, drawn that star. Now they turn around 180 degrees, so they are facing due west. And here again, they should find a star, though this one should be higher in the sky. It shouldn't be quite so close to the horizon, but a little bit higher. We'll see why that's important. Once again, a bright star that they can recognize again and draw something of the landscape. So this is a separate drawing. First, they did a drawing of the east. On another piece of paper, another page, they draw their view of the west. Then they turn 90 degrees to their left, and now they are looking due south. And here again, they should draw a picture of a star that is fairly close to the horizon, and they should draw something of the landscape so that they can see that and it's clear where that is. And finally, for step 4, they turn 180 degrees, right or left, it doesn't matter, and now they are facing due north. And once again, the same thing. Choose a star, draw it, have something of the landscape there. And then, depending on bedtime and weather, they should go out ideally half an hour later. 15 minutes would be a minimum. Half an hour would be much, much better. And do the same thing again. Is their star in the same place as it was before? Can they find it again? Remember, first look at that prominent landmark on the landscape, and then move around from east to west, south to north. And then go out again. Let's say at 9 o'clock. So again, half an hour, do your observations. If you could go out at 9:30, wow, that would be great, or even at 10. If one night, it might be possible, perhaps a Friday night or a Saturday night, that they could do that. So this is what they do. It would be good if they could do this 3 or 4 times. Once won't hack it. They really have to do the same exercise. Go out at the same time. They can certainly choose different stars as long as in that one night They're always consistent about that. We will see what results from this when you look at the slideshow and see what the students were able to draw from their own experience and work we then did in the classroom. So that would take place early in the first week, that the sharing of those drawings and getting, it's as though we're gathering data, we can say this to be scientific about it, and we're sharing this data, and we are trying to see if people saw similar things happening. Certainly they were looking at the same heaven, same stars, though from different points of view. So what's happening there? This will lead us then to a discussion about the pole star and where the pole star, the North Star, Polaris, its different names, where it appears in the sky. And I will be explaining this again in much greater detail in the slideshow. But I want to say that what the children do towards the end of the first week in astronomy in observing the pole star for themselves and then going through a series of exercises in the classroom connected with the pole star. For some children in the class, this is the most important thing that will happen in sixth grade, the experience that the pole star will vouchsafe them. For a smaller group of children in the classroom, this will be the most important experience that they will have in grade 6 and 7 and grade 8. And for one or two, perhaps no one, but it is possible one or two, it may be, as some of my ex-students have told me years later, the most important experience that they ever had in school altogether. Okay, so I hope this makes you eager to look at the slideshow, but don't go yet. Hold on. Let me describe what week two is like. Here, once again, ahead of time, now you've got to schedule all of this correctly. You want them to be observing the phases of the moon. You want them to be observing the moon as much as possible for the full extent of 28 days. So once again, you've got to schedule the star looking along with gazing at the moon. It will not be possible for them to observe the moon every night. For one thing, of course, unless you live in Tucson, Arizona, perhaps, it's unlikely that you're going to have 28 clear nights in a row. Number two, the moon, as you may know, and perhaps you don't know, it doesn't always rise the same time every night. It doesn't always set the same time every morning. So this is going to vary with their bedtime and with their parents' tolerance. In fact, children who are able to do a really full observation of the moon, I would talk to their parents immediately. Don't these kids ever sleep? So you'll perhaps have them observing altogether 14 nights. You know, that's fine. Even 8 or 10 nights would be okay, as long as these nights are interspersed enough so that they're getting all of the phases of the moon. Here again, they'll be observing, they'll be drawing, and during the second week, we will be pooling our data again, discussing what we saw and trying to understand something about those phases of the moon and their relationship to the sun. And then towards the end of the week and flowing over into the next week, we are going to discuss the relationship of the sun and the moon to one another, their path through the sky, the intervals at which they appear, their relative height. We'll be looking at the way in which shadows are cast, and this is something that can actually extend throughout the school year It's another project that can be taken up long before the block and extend long after. And we'll also be learning about the nature of that very interesting phenomenon, two phenomena, the lunar eclipse and the solar eclipse. As far as the content of the astronomy block goes, that's about it. That's really all that you need to do. And the children will derive 99% of the benefit of what the astronomy block has to give. And I'll tell you, you will have a fairly easy way of determining who is deriving maximum benefit from this block without any quizzes or block tests whatsoever. Just look at which children are tearing up. Look at which children are crying. Look at which children are about to throw something at you, or which children are putting their heads on their desks in utter desperation. Yes, this is what you want. Isn't that horrible? You want to see tears, because out of those tears can arise triumph. You are asking children to extrapolate. You are asking children to see relationships inwardly that they could not possibly see in an external way. And this is hard work. You are asking children to begin to think, not in the sort of memory imitative way that they've been thinking all these years, not in the sort of bravado way that you believe they're thinking something through. Even what they've done in computing an interest formula, even what they've done in deciding what's fair or unfair in lending someone money, it pales before the experience that they're going to have here. And all of the silver dots on black paper in the world are not going to get them to this experience, which comes from the skillful, delicate, nuanced interplay of observation, and we might say contemplation of what's been observed, and then, once again, to use that word, extrapolation, so that they can see things that they could not see in a physical way. And once again, you'll see their work, and that will show you what they're doing. And the drawings that they will do will, you know, certainly fill up a main lesson book. There's plenty of drawing to be done. It might be that you have time on your hands. You want to go a little bit further. If you perhaps are receiving objections from some of the more worldly students, but, you know, you're talking about all this like the stars are revolving around the earth, and the sun and the moon are revolving around the earth. Now, of course, you could say to them at this start, this is the apparent movement. Let's imagine that we are like the shepherds of old or the first astronomers. They looked in the sky and it appeared that the sun and moon were moving around us. And we think today one of them is, one of them is not. But let's just take it at face value. But you could also work out choreography in a way in which you have the students represent the planets and show how it would appear that the planets are moving around the Earth, including the Sun, or vice versa. You can have a discussion about that. You can work with that. My own tendency is to hold that off, and not until late in seventh grade, or better yet, when they really have what it takes, in eighth grade, perhaps when you're finishing the Reformation, to talk about Copernicus. And Copernicus and Kepler, Tycho de Brahe, if you've got the time and inclination to work with these giants in astronomy and understand why people got so upset when Copernicus said what for us is obvious, that the Earth moves around the Sun. So you can begin a bit of that with the sixth graders, but I wouldn't belabor the point. As I say, the observation of the stars with the emphasis on the North Star, the observation of the Sun and the Moon, and all of the thinking, all of the hypothetical propositions, and final sense of correctness, that's really what's going on in the astronomy block. It's really an exercise in developing modern thinking. So have a look at the slideshow, and you'll see a more of a fleshing out of all of this.